DW Africa Link. It's 4 p.m. in Accra, elsewhere in Yaoundé and Abuja. The time is 5 o'clock. A warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Discussions on the stories we're covering are happening live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. So go over there to add your comment. Coming up on the program, 1 year to go for Tanzania's President John Magufuli, and the reviews are mixed.
On the achievement part, I can see there is a big change in education, meaning that a lot of people have been able to access schooling.
A US-based democracy watchdog says many Africans are unknowingly under surveillance by their own states via social media platforms.
In 2017,
one of our colleagues was arrested and detained for 5 days at a maximum security prison.
We have much more lined up for you, but first, here's the news in brief.
DW News.
I'm Kai Dambach with the DW News. Nigerian firefighters were battling two fires that broke out nearly simultaneously Tuesday in a market in Lagos. The fires erupted in the Balogun market. The head of the Federal Fire Service in the area said the fires were likely unrelated to one another. It was not immediately clear if there were any injuries or deaths. Still in Nigeria, police there said that they have released 259 people who were held captive in an Islamic rehabilitation center in the southwestern city of Ibadan. State police also said 9 people, including the owner of the center, were arrested and were under investigation. More than 1,000 people have been released from similar centers in the past few weeks. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani said that the country would start injecting uranium gas into more than 1,000 centrifuges, the latest step away from the 2015 nuclear deal.
The ECOWAS mission reaffirms its full support for Prime Minister Aristides Gomez, who saw his government program approved by Parliament on the 15th of October, an act that confirmed the Parliament's support and confidence in the government.
This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. At least 9 U.S. citizens, including 6 children, have been killed by drug cartel gunmen in northern Mexico. A Mexican security secretary said the gunmen may have mistaken the group's large cars for rival gangs. At least 5 children have been taken to the U.S. for medical treatment. Rwandan President Paul Kagame appointed a new foreign minister in a cabinet shuffle. Veteran politician Vincent Biruta will replace Richard Sezibera, who has not been seen in public for months. Biruta had been serving as Rwanda's environmental minister and is the head of the Social Democratic Party. Former advisor to U.S. President Donald Trump, Roger Stone, will go on trial Tuesday for charges of lying to Congress, obstructing official proceedings, and witness tampering. Stone previously said he was not guilty of the charges.
I will plead not guilty to these charges. I believe this is a politically motivated investigation. I am troubled by the political motivations of the prosecutors. And as I have said previously, there is no circumstance whatsoever under which I will bear false witness against the president, nor will I make up lies to ease the pressure on myself. I look forward to being fully and completely vindicated.
For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dambach.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link program. I am Eddie Micah Jr.
And my name is Isaac Mugabe. As usual, welcome your comments on our Facebook page, DW Africa. I can see our usual contributor, Monju Enos, saying hello, DW. And we have comments from Davis Jordan, Chris Patrick, and Zenzo Zimbabwe. As usual, DW Africa is your platform. Now, today marks 4 years since the coming into power of Tanzania's President John Pombe Magufuli. His arrival promised a new wave of leadership in Tanzania, and his no-nonsense bulldozer approach became an example for citizens across the region of what they expected from their leaders.
Now, with 1 year to go in his first term before the general election set for late next year, his approach has been highly praised but also criticized for curtailing human rights and freedoms. To give us a broader picture, our contributor from Tanzania, Tulanana Bohela, sent us this report.
Mimi John Pombe Joseph Magufuli.
When Tanzania's Magufuli came to power in 2015, he promised to make sweeping changes, like to root out corruption and abuse of office by government officials and accountability. So far, he hasn't disappointed. He cancelled lavish Independence Day celebrations to free up funds to fight a cholera outbreak, slashed the budget for a state dinner to celebrate the opening of parliament, and instead used that money to buy hospital beds. Chadema opposition party spokesperson Tumaini Makene agrees that Magufuli's administration has also made achievements like ensuring free education, an issue that their then candidate Edward Lowassa was riding on in the 2015 election.
On the achievement part, I can see there is a big change in education, meaning that a lot of people have been able to access schooling. Many students have been registered.
It's another busy day in Tanzania's economic capital, Dar es Salaam. The city's infrastructure has seen a major facelifts with overhead bridges and expanding highways. This is a legacy that the Magufuli government is keen to leave in the hearts of Tanzanians. And I'm curious to find out what residents here think of this administration's first term.
There have been quite a few achievements. Right now, civil servants are really working. You can go to a government office and someone will ask if you have been attended to, whereas before, that wasn't the case.
The former works minister, President John Magufuli, has definitely left a mark on Tanzanian history, branding himself as a man for the people, but internationally leaving an odd taste in the mouth of the international community.
That was Tulanana Bohela with that report.
And on our Facebook page, we asked you a question. As an African, how do you see Magufuli's performance 4 years down the lane? And how would you describe him as a man? Before we get into the comments, Eddie, there are quite a mix of comments there. But let me first give a shout out to Sohaba Barongo, who says he's listening to us closely from Dar es Salaam. That is Tanzania.
Okay, that's great.
Off we go.
Well, a lot of comments, like you said. Let's start with one from Davis Jordan, who says, however much he's doing the so-called good things for Tanzania, he should respect the freedom of assembly, association and press.
Chris Patrick says we need such presidents in Africa to streamline the continent because it's a bit rotten when it comes to leadership. He's excellent.
Zenzo Zimbao says the fact that Tanzanians support him is enough for us Africans to conclude that he is a great leader. So this one is a bit skeptical.
But Eddie, unsurprisingly, the opposition leader there of Chadema, he's full of praises of Magufuli.
Which is quite
rare,
isn't
it? He's done something good when it comes to education. Mm-hmm. I think it's because of the universal primary education there.
Exactly. But I think that's a good sign. I mean, opposition should not always condemn even if something is good. So this is a clear sign that politicians can come together and make things happen.
Mm-hmm. We have one comment here from Simeon who says, I'm not from Tanzania, but I've been following this Magufuli man. He's a good president, he says. Anyway, many thanks for those comments. Keep them flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and we shall come back to them whenever we can. Now, to a story that has been making headlines for quite some time. It's in Brazil, which is still investigating the cause of an oil spill that has hit 320 beaches along the northeast coast. Since early September, the oil is still spilling and affecting the fishing industries as well as polluting the environment.
Authorities describe the spill as one of the country's worst environmental disasters. Authorities say that there was no effective, correct or precise way to monitor the oil spill. DW's John Wiltshire reports.
It's one of the worst oil spills in Brazil's history. Brazilian authorities say it's impossible to tell how much oil is likely to come ashore. And no one's sure who's responsible. Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro says it's the fault of a Greek-flagged oil tanker, and he's asked Interpol to investigate. But Bolsonaro removed environmental safeguards. Now, Brazil's coastal ecosystems, its beaches, coral and marine life have been devastated.
Life won't be able to flourish and grow like it's always been able to, and it affects the food chain. It's a community of land and sea species here. This is a disaster. This oil cannot be allowed to remain.
The cleanup effort is enormous, including government authorities, the military, and thousands of volunteers. Because it has to be. Over 300 beaches along 2,000 kilometers of coastline must be cleared of crude oil.
DW's John Wiltshire with that report. Now, moving on, a US-based democracy watchdog says many Africans are unknowingly under surveillance by their own states via social media platforms. Zimbabwe and Sudan are among the countries to be singled out.
Well, according to its 2019 Freedom on the Net report, the watchdog Freedom House revealed that governments are increasingly turning to social media to garner huge amounts of data from citizens to identify perceived threats and often to silence opposition groups. Crispin Makidewu has the following report.
The report by Freedom House warns that social media surveillance threatens civil rights activism on digital platforms. In an interview with DW, Isabel Linzer, an expert at Freedom House on internet freedom in sub-Saharan Africa, described the ways through which governments carry out surveillance on their citizens.
This often includes using artificial intelligence, and in many cases, security agencies are automating their mass surveillance of social media. And we have seen this in several sub-Saharan Africa countries, Kenya, South Africa, Angola, Nigeria, and Uganda.
Many African governments, like Zimbabwe, have passed laws that enable them to monitor their citizens and follow their behavior online. Zimbabwean blogger Munya Blogo said he is accustomed to online threats and cyberbullying, but even he admits that the risks keep growing.
In 2017, one of our colleagues was arrested and detained for 5 days at a maximum security prison for allegedly trying to overthrow a legitimately elected government using social media.
Zimbabwe also has what is known as the Interception of Communications Act. Social media played a crucial role in last year's protests in Sudan that eventually led to the ousting of former President Omar al-Bashir. Under his presidency, censorship and internet surveillance by state actors were prevalent. However, the new government in Sudan promised change, and it still enjoys popularity among those who took part in the uprising.
Crispin Makidewo with that report. Now, at this moment, many of you are contributing or sending in your comments on the Magufuli story. But before we come to those comments, let's first bring in comments about the surveillance report. Beginning with Mega Mega, he says, the example of the countries you gave is really annoying, DW. How dare you leave out Cameroon? That must be his country.
Definitely. Bundastan says, the US has built one of the biggest embassies in Harare. What is the purpose of such a mammoth compound, if not stuffed with spies?
And Paul Eze says, those who have skeletons in their cupboards have nothing to be afraid of. Let them spy well to improve good governance.
Well, Kakari Kambushi says, spy tech in Africa is still far-fetched to worry about, unless one is a politician.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of comments. I mean, spying should not be encouraged.
Surveillance, right? Especially on social media platforms.
Yeah. It infringes on one's freedoms, and that's what people are complaining about. However, some of these comments suggest that people don't really care much about it either.
Apparently, I understand that some of the apps that are supposed to protect someone actually, you know, mm-hmm. can leak out information.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not an expert in this, but
yeah, I mean, we've been hearing different reports. I mean, once upon a time, there was a report that some type of television sets are even recording while you have no idea what's happening. The gadgets we're using,
mm-hmm.
hell, we have our phones in the studio, Isaac. I mean, who knows? Well, something is going out.
They can spy because I want them to follow my show, right?
Really?
Anyway,
that's
let's go back to the top story. It's 1 year for Magufuli before he leaves office, and many of you guys are sending in your comments here. Let me read these live comments. Abani Ebb says, I love Magufuli. He should be given a second chance. And yeah, not flying with the state plane.
Well, Anna Acheng is definitely in support. She says, the best president in our time. If possible, I can vote for him again and again.
Etia Nsen Elvis says, President Magufuli has been an outstanding leader. I just Wish we had more Magufulis in Africa. Looks like, you know, he has big fans out there. And just like opposition politicians, you know, on the other side.
Yeah,
keep the comments flowing as usual on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
This is Africa Link. We're coming to you live from our studio here in Bonn, Germany. I am Eddie Micah Jr.
And my name is Isaac Mugabe. As usual, DW Africa is the place to be for your comments. Just drop them there and we'll always come back to them whenever we can.
Coming up on the program, Kenya's population census finds over 9 million more people in just 10 years. But what does this mean?
It means we're facing a disaster. Unless we have an economy which is growing fast enough to accommodate the people, the extra population, for housing, for food, for education, for clothing, and for healthcare.
Well, 9 million, you know, added to the population.
Yeah.
That's really not a small number.
And not at all.
We have a guest, you know, who's waiting for us, and she's Kenyan, Edith Kimani. We shall ask her.
We shall ask her.
And she's worked with the media for some time. What all this means, but not on air, isn't it, Eddie?
Definitely.
Also coming up here in Germany, it's been 30 years since the fall of the Berlin Wall. So what has changed?
Well, we'll be getting to that in a bit, Isaac. But first, let's go to Kenya, where we just talked about. It seems miracles are happening because their population has increased by almost 10 million in the last 10 years. This was revealed by President Kenyatta after the latest national population and housing census was carried out.
Yes, Eddie, their total population is now over 47 million. Can you imagine? So what is the increase attributed to, and how will the data be instrumental in guiding government planning and policy? Well, our correspondent Andrew Wasike has more from Nairobi.
Speaking when he officially launched the census report, President Kenyatta said the findings will guide successful planning and implementation of government development initiatives.
These results now provide us with a unique opportunity to realign our development strategies, our policies and programs. And so therefore today we do direct that all ministries, departments and government agencies to utilize these results. And I also urge other arms of government, counties, stakeholders and also our development partners to make use of these results in their planning processes.
This year's census was a first of its kind in Kenya, in that, for the first time ever, Kenya fully embraced the use of technology in their census processes. But some have questioned the credibility of the 2019 census. Demas Kiprono is a lawyer and works with the Safety and Dignity Department at Amnesty International, Kenya office.
Judging from the secrecy that has surrounded this exercise, and there were certain questions that don't seem relevant for a census that were asked during this exercise. So it seems like there was no transparency in the whole process, and which many Kenyans, it would suggest that there could be some nefarious things going on.
Some analysts have, however, warned that this population boom could have negative effects for the economic future of the country. Martin Kariuki is an accountant and political enthusiast.
It means we are facing a disaster unless we have an economy which is growing fast enough to accommodate the people, the extra population, for housing, for food, for education, for clothing, and for healthcare.
Kenya made history this year, becoming the first African country to document intersex community, which was a big win for intersex people. This is expected to help the government formulate progressive policies that will ensure their rights are realized and safeguarded. The census also will determine how public schools will get funded. According to the United Nations Population Fund, the increasing number of youth can bring economic development and positive change if they are educated, healthier, and availed suitable employment opportunities.
Andrew Wasike with that report. And as you heard in that report, Eddie, there are some repercussions when we see a population boom, like is the case in Kenya.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's pros and cons to everything. I mean, overall, the continent of Africa is a very youthful population. We talk about a 77%, meaning more than 77% of the population are under the age of 35. So that can be a good thing. But then if all these young folks are not having enough jobs, are not being taken well care of, then of course that can be a curse instead of a blessing.
And in case you're following us live through our partner radio stations and you're from Kenya, tell us whether Kenyans have really embraced family planning methods as a way of, you know, keeping the population at desired levels. Otherwise, many people might miss out on services that the government has to provide.
I feel like you're calling for some trouble, Isaac.
Not at all. Anyway, if at all, also Africans can embrace like a one-child policy, like has been the case. You can also join the debate on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Africa on the move.
Well, for our music lovers, you may have heard of Shatta Wale. He is a popular musician in Ghana who recently featured on a track with global music icon Beyoncé. He has a huge following in Ghana and around the world. Eddie, you're from Ghana, isn't it?
Well, everybody knows Shatta Wale if you're from Ghana, you know. But of course, most now know him because of that song he featured with Beyoncé. So he's what you call a hustler, coming from a difficult background, growing up in one of Ghana's biggest slums called Nima. He's not just doing music to entertain, but is also mentoring and inspiring the next generation to get off the streets and avoid social vices. Our reporter Isaac Kaleji in Accra sat down to have a chat with him and sent us this.
That's one of Ghana's popular musicians, Chasni Ama Mensah Jr., who goes by the name Shatta Wale, working on a new song at his makeshift studio in Accra. Despite being controversial because of the nature of his lyrics, the dancehall artist produces music that highlights daily challenges the youth in Ghana face. And because of that, he is celebrated. He told me about his journey.
It doesn't be easy for me getting to where I've gotten to, and I believe with a focus and determination, you know, one can get there.
From humble beginnings, Shatta Wale grew up in one of Accra's biggest slums, Nima, and at some point struggled to even make ends meet. But his remarkable success story in music over the past decade has brought him closer to the youth who find themselves in similar situations. Many of them are full of praises for him.
I grew up in Nima, and that's where I started, you know, seeing, you know, some revelations about my musical career. So, you know, as I'm growing up, I always, you know, enter into the ghettos, into the zongos, where I talk to them about how to be yourself, you know, and, you know, really respect what you are doing, you know. So most of the times when I, you know, I tell people that I pay my tithes on the streets, and not just the streets, but in these areas, the slums, you know, the less privileged areas that I feel, you know, I can touch someone and change a life.
Ever since he featured on international superstar Beyoncé Knowles' track Gift album with other artists, his fame has grown steadily. Shatta Wale says that collaboration has been instrumental in rethinking the business side of his career.
To see a top artist like Beyoncé, you know, putting me on the track means a lot. And, you know, it's a build-up for our music industry, for us to see that we can get far if we really want to. And working with Beyoncé on the track has made me seem how business-minded they are, you know, to look for talent and work with. And people are going to also get an opportunity as time goes on. And that's what we need for the next generation.
Shatta Wale is hoping for more success in the future, but says touching many lives with his songs and inspiring young people to showcase their talent is very important.
I like the beat. I love the beat. That was Isaac Kelechi talking about Ghanaian musician Shatta Wale. Eddie, I can't let you off the hook since you come from that part of the continent. Just give me quickly a cappella of one of Shatta Wale's hits that you know. Please, go ahead, start. We don't have so much time.
I mean, he's got so many popular songs. One of them mm-hmm. is something that he's basically continuously saying, I know my level.
Mm-hmm.
I know my level. I know my... Hey, you're doing beatbox. Oh, my goodness. Okay. No, but he's definitely popular and he's really moving a generation along with him.
Oh, well, Eddie, thank you for trying, but perhaps you'll have to pull up your socks next time, yeah?
Thanks, Isaac.
Focus Europe.
Now, for Focus on Europe, we are going to bring you this story that is soon to be a big one in the coming days. Imagine you are one but living in a divided country or separated by a wall. Well, once upon a time, there was a wall that divided not only two cities but also divided families, friends, and took away people's freedom. Yes, that was the case in Germany, where the East and the West were literally divided by a wall.
But then the power and unity of the people became stronger than the wall, and eventually the wall came down. That was 30 years ago. So what is there to celebrate 30 years after the fall of the wall? That is the first question I asked DW's Daniel Pels in Berlin.
Plenty of reasons to celebrate. I mean, people in East Germany, the former communist part, have enjoyed freedom and democracy for this past 30 years. There are also some areas in East Germany where the economy has grown, where you can see even people returning who left after the economy collapsed in the early 1990s. And I mean, one other issue that is often overlooked, you had families who were living on both sides of the wall, and for 40 years they had a really hard time seeing each other. Now they can freely travel across and meet.
East Germans are complaining that they feel they cannot freely speak up.
Yeah, you hear this those sentiments quite often these days. But, I mean, there is freedom of speech in Germany. And I think one issue is that there are conspiracy theories floating around, which are simply not being true. And I think the second thing is that people find it hard to accept criticism. I mean, of course, you can voice your opinions freely, but you also have to accept that you can get criticized in return.
People are wondering, the physical wall may have fallen, but is there still some sort of wall?
Well, there are plenty of walls remaining. There are also still a lot of prejudices. When you talk to people in West Germany, you have a lot of people who have never visited East Germany and who have a very strange picture of how East Germany is these days. So there are plenty of walls. But I think, yes, I sometimes do talk to people here who have different skin colors, who might have come from different countries. And they also tell me they are sometimes very worried to leave Berlin and go somewhere. We have also right-wing extremist rallies in East Germany who draw fairly large crowds. You can see there are attacks against foreigners, there are attacks against party offices and sometimes even party representatives from left-wing political parties. But the other thing that is important to emphasize, East Germany is also not just one big no-go zone. There are very serious problems, yes, but the other issue, for example, is there is one constituency in mm-hmm. East Germany which is represented in parliament by an MP who was once born in Senegal. So I think that's the other side of the coin.
What is Germany's role in ensuring that the world is connected and that people of all kind are being respected?
Germany keeps on pressing for human rights in various international bodies, such as the United Nations, for example, that Germany tries also to address issues in countries where you see walls actually rising, where you see separation, intolerance against people from different religions, from different cultural backgrounds. I think it's important that Germany constantly reminds also the world of the experiences that Germany had with the wall, but also that it is possible to bring down walls.
Is Germany more united 30 years after?
Well, it's certainly more united than it was immediately after the official reunification. So I think Germany has made some progress. It would be unfair to say that Germany is more divided than ever. And it will, I think, take generations, many, many generations, before Germany is truly a united country.
I was speaking to DW's Daniel Peltz in Berlin.
And the day is the 9th November. That is pretty soon, you know, in 4 days' time. Mm-hmm. In case you'd like to know more of this story, just go to our page, our webpage, that is dw.com/Africa. There is a piece there by our own Assumpta Latus, who traveled together with a team of our colleagues from other departments. 2,000 kilometers, you know, where the world once stood. And it's an article about 30 years after the Berlin, an African perspective. Please go there, read it, share it, and remember also to comment, tell us what you think by going to our Facebook page, W Africa.
Rightly so. I think one thing that we learn from all of this is that these days there may not be many physical walls, but there are still a lot of walls of some kind that are preventing people from moving on.
Yeah, for instance, like we've been covering, you know, Cameroon for quite some time now, Anglophone versus Francophone, and all the so many things, you know, imaginary borders that divide us. Thanks for giving us company. On behalf of the team, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Eddie Micah Jr.
DW. Made for Mind.